And welcome back. How's everyone
How are
getting
we getting
on?
on?
Good.
Jinx. So today we're joined by Nick Wary for, I think, the third time.
Okay.
So Nick, how about you introduce yourself?
I'm Nick Wary, number six in the world, is a competitive eater with Major League Eating. Significant other to the number one female eater in the world and number five overall with Major League Eating. Personal trainer, diet coach, cargo shorts dad.
I love
I love it. Jinx again.
it.
so if you want to go and see Nick talk about the first two things, unfortunately he doesn't talk about the cargo shorts, but you can see that in the first episodes we did with him. But today we're going to talk a bit about training and diet and health overall, because it's pretty important these days with the old COVID lurking around. So I suppose you have a bit of a history with bodybuilding, as you can see. So tell us a bit about that before we start.
Sure. So when I was always relatively active because my dad was a contractor and I worked with him, but I started to work out a little bit in high school because I was always kind of just a little bit doughy. I had like long curly hair and a mouthful of braces. I wasn't exactly, knocking the girl's dad, so to speak. So in college, I actually got dumped and I was like, you know what? I'm going to show her. I'm going to get jacked and she's going to come running back. She didn't care, first of all. And second of all, I fell in love with the process of really training and being able to kind of be a sculptor, but with my own body. So then it was learning the nutrition aspect of things, learning the training aspect of things, started working with clients, next competed in bodybuilding for about 10 years, and then have just worked with, dozens and dozens and dozens of clients over those years, using different nutrition protocols, health protocols, training protocols, so on and so forth.
How do you feel about like fad diets? What I fell into was the paleo diet. I think overall it's pretty healthy, but
The
practically.
paleo, they all have some type of flaw, basically. There's a diet for everybody, ultimately, but the thing is, none of them are probably the same. It's going to be the one you stick to, probably. Like the paleo diet is, which paleo are we talking about? Are we talking about a caveman who was in Florida, during that time? Are we talking about a caveman who was closer to Antarctica or a caveman who was in, Eastern Europe? They all had different diets. It was based on what they could pick or kill. So the whole concept of paleo diet is a flawed concept because, what were they killing? What were they picking? Were they a nomadic tribe that followed reindeer? Like a lot of the people who still live that style of life, like almost like an Eskimo Inuit style of life. There's people who still do that. Or were they closer to a body of water? So their fish intake was much higher, or did they live a lot through vegetation? So, that's just on that diet, keto or paleo or low carb or low sugar. I think what it creates is it's very divisive, fad dieting. It's like, this is the best diet. And it becomes like politics, where if somebody disagrees with you, you have to like verbally punch them in the face. When maybe it's just like, find the one that puts you calorically in a good range and that you could see yourself doing for the rest of your life. That's probably a good starting point.
Absolutely. And with a lot of the fad ones, I don't see you doing it for your whole life. Like there's certain flaws in different diets, like you made reference to ones that get a bit, I suppose, angsty when you disagree, and they'll be vegans. Now, part of people want to be vegans. We've had people on before who are, vegans and done it for a long time. If you can do it, absolutely. But if it works, we had a regenerative agriculture talk with Chris DeVault, and he kind of ragged on them as well. But yeah, that's a clear example of one that, that can be a bit militaristic if you disagree with them. Being someone who's involved with like people's diet and blah blah blah, what results have you seen from people using the vegan diet?
My sister was a vegan for a period. Actually, both of my sisters were vegans for periods of time. And I've worked with clients who've requested like vegetarian or vegan based protocols, even working with me. And I'll abide by that because sometimes it's morally based, which that's cool. That's your thing. Sometimes it's because they think it's health based because they watched too much of the documentary or read the book Forks Over Knives, which is completely biased. So don't ingest that trash. But anyway, well, both for like the people closest to me that I've seen do it or worked with have done it, is typically a slight loss in performance for those who are athletes, or just energy levels for like what I call general population, like my sisters. They're still both active, but neither of them like train consistently or whatever. But I know like one of my sisters, although she lost weight, she also felt like, she's like, I feel weak. I would feel like I'm losing muscle tissue, because their thing is like, well, you can get enough protein if you just eat 67 pounds of pinto beans and broccoli. It's right. But most people don't have a competitive eater capacity to do that. And the GI distress they get from eating all those gassy foods is much more than they would get from like just eating 4 ounces of chicken or egg whites or fish to get the same thing. So for me, the one, I think calorically, it's really easy to hit a goal with a vegan or vegetarian based diet, because typically your calorie density is much lower and your nutrient density is very high. I think you're typically lacking in certain nutrients, like a lot of B vitamins and maybe even iron, depending on how your diet's set up. And I think some people just use a vegan or vegetarian based diet to eat granola bars and ho-hos all day and just say, well, like, meat is murder. And it's like, well, that's fine if that's your thing. You don't want to kill a cow or a chicken. But don't say it's healthier, because the China study cherry picked a whole bunch of data and put it into a shitty documentary, because it's unequivocally false that it's healthier. Unanimously.
Have you heard of the vegan teacher, Nick?
Who is that?
There's this woman on the app TikTok, and her name's the vegan teacher. And what she does, she says it is, she says if you are not vegan, that you are going straight to hell.
This Tom, is her, you think you can put up a clip of it?
I really don't want to promote her.
Go on.
Maybe not a clip, but I'll show you a picture of her. But she is the
probably going to hell anyway. But
no, but like she plays this thing that if she calls it vegan phobia, that if you swear to God, she compares not being vegan to racism, sexism. Mm. She compares pigs going to the slaughter to the Holocaust.
Oh yeah, no, that's just atrocious that she even compares those two things.
Okay, this is her ideology, and she promotes these documentaries and these books that you're telling people that is biased, and you know it's
and it's not satire as well. Oh, that's the scary thing.
I'll show you a picture of her name. Also, really fucked up thing I hate about her is that she makes her dog be vegan. Her dog's not allowed meat or anything. I fucking hate that. I can't stand it.
That thing just like biologically wants to rip something to pieces and consume it.
Anyway, this is her, and as you can see, her diet is
We can't see her yet.
Okay, well I'll give you a minute. It's very is it malnutrition the word for it?
There she is. Oh.
Man, she looks like the picture of health. So
yeah, she looks like your typical Karen that would arrest people for walking on the street or the wrong side of the street. I'm not kidding.
No. Judging her off her appearance aside, she doesn't look like she's too healthy overall. Yeah, she is pretty skinny. She's quite pale. I mean,
she may have decent health markers. It's kind of hard to say, but it's like people don't realize muscle tissue is also important. Not like to say you have to have as much as me or be built like a brick shit house, but like muscle tissue is also important. Being emaciated just because you're at a quote unquote healthy weight is as dumb as when people say healthy at any size and they're 400 pounds. Mm. Like there's a kind of balance where the human body likes to be, or it probably will off you, so to speak, you know?
Well, what do you think is like the optimum size?
Yeah.
Like, for an athlete, like say you're 5'11", like is 200 something pounds good? Is 180 pounds good
for an athlete? Maybe, yeah. But like, what's optimal for an athlete is not going to be optimal for longevity. Like a Ferrari doesn't go 200,000 miles. It is always kind of how I put it to clients. It's like why bodybuilders, like some people know Jay Cutler, the bodybuilder, that was like a 5-time Mr. O. If you look at him now, he's about 60 pounds lighter when he competed. Now he's still jacked compared to a normal person, but Jay knows he will die very young if he walks around at 290 the rest of his life, even though he's got a good body composition. That heart pumping blood to 290 pounds in a 5'8 frame is not going to be happy.
What do you think of athletes, especially UFC fighters, when they have to make weight? They is it the bath Epsom salts?
Yeah, sometimes Epsom's all bad. Sometimes it's saunas, crazy saunas. Like, I know for me, you know, having worked with like wrestlers or fighters, boxers, whatever, or just sometimes even bodybuilding or physique competitors, there's a weight cutoff, a class cutoff. And the idea is you could be the heaviest person in the next class cutoff if we just dry you out a little bit more, and then we'll fill you back out with food, and maybe you'll compare better to the lighter people. It's your body's just not like it, and it's, but just like a lot of things, you know, it's, is that sacrifice for your given endeavor worth it to you? I'm similar to a football player taking shots in the head, or, you know, or a mixed martial artist, you know, getting punched in the face, or what have you. Like, I know personally, one of my contest preps, I went from 232 pounds to right around 167 pounds in 11 weeks.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah. So about 65 pounds in 11 weeks. And that was, I can't imagine, that probably took a couple of years off the back end, you know, when I get there. And I'm pretty sure that contest prep, the combination between that and having my daughter, I think aged me like 5 years in those 11 weeks.
Wow. That is
the largest, I'm trying to find like the largest drop in weight for a fight in the UFC. The highest I found was 32 pounds.
Remember, I know Lesnar used to have to drop a fair amount of weight to make 265, like when he first came over. But then once a lot of the gas started to wear off and he started losing some muscle tissue and he had like diverticulitis, I think he walks around closer to 265 once he was there. But him or like some of those guys in, what was it, Pride, when they pretty much encouraged drug use in the old Pride fights, like Kevin Randleman and Mark Coleman, that looked like the basically like the Toxic Avenger. The amount of weight they had to drop sometimes was probably mammoth.
I remember for that, remember Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder 2? They should have a separate, like, I think Tyson Fury was like 42 pounds heavier than Deontay Wilder. Like,
that's a bit dodgy.
That's crazy.
Much, much bigger. And he took shots. He's just a better boxer overall. Wilder is built like a prototypical fighter. Like, if you built one in a lab, you'd want him to be built like Deontay Wilder. I think Fury is just five times the boxer that Wilder is.
Mm-hmm. I think his fight with AJ is going to be announced for May or June this year.
Oh, that's awesome.
God, I can't wait to watch that. And apparently it's going to be in, I think it might be in Wembley. So
who knows?
We might go, Jared. Match games on.
Who knows? But yeah, man, people losing weight really fast is, they make it look easy in the UFC, but I guess for the average person, it doesn't work that way because that's water weight they're losing.
Primarily, I mean, some of it will be fat tissue, but like, put it into perspective. If we're doing it on a mathematical basis, let's say you got to cut 3,500 calories a week from your diet or through expenditure to lose a pound of fat, right? So the amount you'll have to cut, like, people watch too much of The Biggest Loser and people don't realize they're encouraging laxative abuse and diuretic use and things like that on those shows. And those people are also 600 pounds. They have way more weight to lose than someone who's 210. You know, it's almost more dangerous for them to be that heavy and not lose the weight. So rapid weight loss, from what I've seen, even with clients that are, let's say, 300 pounds, I'll typically, the first couple of weeks, might lose 2 to 5 for a couple of weeks. But I like to aim for like 0.5 to 2 pounds a week is a relatively comfortable weight loss where you can maintain tissue. You're not overly stressing your body out for a period of time. But you also don't want to stay in a crazy deficit for extended periods of time without either periodic refeeds for a period of a few days or like intentional overfeeding or around maintenance or diet breaks. So you may go to maintenance for like a week or a week and a half and then go back into a deficit because you get what's called metabolic adaptation. So like T3, leptin, those hormones downregulate as you get lighter. Like people think people who are super heavy have slow metabolisms. No, they eat a dickload of food. Typically speaking, there are outliers in a very small percentage. But if you are, you know, on my 600 pound life and Dr. Niall is giving you a lecture, and your big thing is like, oh, I only eat 1200 calories. Nah, bro, you don't get to 700 eating 1200 calories. You get to 700 eating like 12,000 calories a day. It's a physiological impossibility to get there without that. That's how the laws of thermodynamics work. It's a great thing. Like, the great thing about science is it's the truth whether you believe it or not.
Woo!
You know, that is a huge statement to make, because there's a huge debate about science just being real or not, and I'm glad you bring that up, Nick.
Someone gave us an offer to put us in contact with a flat earther, like a big enough guy, and I want to do it, but I want to have like a geography person on with us. Like, what would you call like a geography scientist?
Geologist? No, not geologist.
Because I only know like from like the Big Bang Theory, they made fun of people who studied geography.
No, they made fun of the guy who studied rocks.
Yeah. But no, I want someone who's an expert in that field if we have that conversation.
I didn't even know that. You didn't tell me that. That's fucking awesome, dude. I can't wait to talk to them. I'm going to shit on that person. No.
Yeah, you guys going to get like Neil deGrasse Tyson on here or something like that, you know?
We get an astronaut on. Oh, Jerry, we should get an astronaut on as well. Okay. Well, bro.
We'll start after this. But yeah, as you said, like it or not, science is it's there. And obviously, like, you're dealing with that because you're dealing with biology in the human body.
Yeah.
And how to feel it the best, how to treat it the best, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's different sides to, I guess, health overall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could work the gym, like, 7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't. But, like, if you have no recovery, you're not going to do very well. So
right.
How do you take care of recovery? Or how long do you think people should take a break from their workouts?
That kind of depends. Like, I determine what's called, and there's a great resource if you were to look up Renaissance Periodization or Dr. Mike Isriatel, Jared Feather, those guys. They have some excellent programming that I'm a big fan of, where there's a concept called MRV, or maximum recoverable volume. So finding basically how much can I beat the hell out of myself and still recover and progress. You know, but a lot of that is going to be based on how much sleep you're getting, how much water you're drinking, how nutrient dense your diet is, or how balanced your diet is towards what you're doing. So there's that balance there. And if your goal is performance, you're going to increase MRV as you go down your training career. Like, obviously my maximum recoverable volume is going to be much higher than somebody just started training. It's the repeated bout effect, where basically if you keep doing a lot of similar things, your body learns to recover. So for a newer client, let's say that just started training, they might train 3 days a week if their goal is like muscle gain or fat loss with weights, like a push-pull leg. So one day is like biceps, back, rear delts, things of that nature. The next day might be like chests, front delts, triceps, whatever. And the next day might be like hamstrings, quads, blah, blah, blah. But those might be Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, and whatever, and the calories might drop slightly on the off days from training, be slightly higher in the days they do train. But it'll be largely based on the client's needs and lifestyle. If the client works a physical labor job, their volume of their training is going to probably have to be lower because the demand is what they do. Or I've had a client that's a police officer, he can't be limping out of the gym after leg day because he kind of needs to be able to run at work or perform at work, as opposed to somebody that sits all day. So finding that based on the calorie need. If you're in a surplus because you're trying to gain tissue, obviously you can recover better. If you're in a diet because you're trying to maybe lose body fat, you're not going to recover as well. And then while doing all that, maintaining as good as you can health markers, which that's not a direct correlation, so to speak, all the time. We're talking about performance. So that might be obviously vitamins, minerals, green supplements if you're not a big veggie eater, prebiotic fiber to keep you regular, because if you're not doing correctly, nothing's going to be all well. So keep your water intake high. So I don't say it's completely individualized, because we all have a lot of the same rules, but the thing is we're all doing different things. So it's highly individualized based on that. So you tailor it to yourself. Don't read muscular development and be like, well, Phil Heath's a 7-time Mr. Olympia, and this is the training he does, so I should do it right now. You will feel like dog shit in like 4 days and not be able to train anymore. Because A, Phil is a genetic anomaly, and that's why he's a 7-time Mr. Olympia. B, if you're a professional bodybuilder, your recovery is optimal because of supplementation, extracurricular supplementation, diet, sleep, whatever. That's your job. And C, if you're just Joe Schmo accountant, chances are you're not taking your diet, nutrition, sleep, or anything as serious as the pro. So,
that's a fair assumption. yeah. Yeah, I think in comparison to yourself, I'd be kind of slacking. Yeah, actually, yeah. In honor of having you on today, I went for a run this morning. So there you go.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. If I tried to run, though, if I like took a jog or tried to run a few miles, I would probably wake up tomorrow feeling like I had shin splints. And, like, my legs would feel like Joe Pesci at the end of Casino, like before they dump him in a hole, basically. So I'm not built for that. I'm built to move heavy things. Or when we moved into this apartment, Miki had to return the rental truck that we moved the furniture with. So when she was returning the truck, I carried the couch up the two flights of stairs myself and the dressers and the other things. And I felt like someone would kick the shit out of me the next day because it wasn't a typical gym workout. So It's all kind of relative.
So we'll cancel your NFL career then? If
you can. Basically, yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't. I won't be added to the 56-man roster for the Super Bowl.
You know, it's a shame, but, you know, you'll get there one day, son.
But in all fairness, with the size of them, there's still hope for the MMA career. I'd like to see that.
You would kick ass, bro.
It would be fun. It would be fun. I don't think I have the right temperament for it because there's a level of keeping your cool, like having that controlled aggression when somebody hits you in the face or wants to take your head off. I haven't lost my temper in a long, long time. Because that guy has to stay under wraps. So I don't know if it would be a good idea for me to, as fun as it would be, I'd love to train in it, but that guy kind of scares me a little bit. So he stays, I'm just dad now. I'm cargo shorts, fanny pack dad, and I'm good with that. The aggression is on the
At least with training, you're able to like take care of, you know, your emotions. Exactly. If you're feeling aggressive, you're able to deal with it.
You know, when you just said that you're cargo shorts, dad, just this thought came into my head. But dude, your daughter's boyfriend, bro. Fuck me. What a poor guy. Whenever he meets you, it's like I'm scared of my girlfriend, dad, a little bit now. Let's be honest here, right? He's a cool dude, but like
the goal was like to have enough intimidation factor where I can just be super polite and nice and not embarrass my daughter. And the kid is still scared shitless. He's like, oh, God, he's even nice, too. He's just playing like that. He's just playing. He's not really nice. You know, that's kind of the goal. It's just based solely on appearance, the kid is shitting his pants.
Oh, God. Oh, the poor kid. Oh, Christ, have mercy. Nick, have mercy on him, please.
Oh, gosh. That reminds me of a story. It was James C. Burns. He was talking with someone, and there was a homeless guy like coming up to him, like asking for money. But he started getting super aggressive, like. Mm-hmm. And James turns to him and he says, "Excuse me, sir, I believe you're making a mistake." the guy like very quickly snapped out of it and just leaves. You know, like
yeah.
You know, you get the casual like, "Would you ever stop? Would you?" Off, but excuse me, sir. Yeah. I believe you're making a mistake. That's some John Wick stuff.
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's kind of like there are some people that if they stay that calm, that's almost scarier than the person who's completely losing their shit. It's like the guy who sits at the end of the bar, and as long as he stays sitting down, everything's cool. Once that guy stands up, there are people like, dude, I'm fucking out of here. Like that guy stands up. No.
Yeah, but anyway, when it comes to weight loss, like people have an expectation of what they think is going to happen, and then there's the reality, and often that can put them off. Yeah. Do you see that with your own clients or in general in your industry?
Oh, totally. Because again, like the biggest loser in the immediate gratification society we live in, where I can get fast food delivered to my door in 6 minutes, or I can order a package off of Amazon. And, you know, I just had pee pads for my dog delivered basically overnight, you know, from Amazon and this and that. Or everybody sees Women's World or Star Magazine or O magazine or any of these at the checkout stands, like, lose 17 pounds in 15 seconds with the keto diet. So it's, people expect that to be legit. The problem is, the only way to lose 17 pounds in like a week is to like cut your arm off. That would probably be healthier than doing that like diet. In theory, you could do it, but there'd be nothing healthy and nothing sustainable about it. So there's always that expectation, which is actually why whenever I start working with a client, there's a questionnaire or a phone call interview ahead of time or both to kind of gauge how ready somebody is to do it and where they stand. Because I also want to gauge like, what type of person is this? What are they going to thrive on as far as feedback? Because some people want really militant approach. Some people are going to need to kind of be coddled. Some people just are not ready for a weight loss. Like, I flat out stopped working with a client, a paid client, because I'm like, you don't need me. You need to probably talk to somebody, you know, about your relationship with food or your relationship with exercise. And I'm not qualified to do that. We can have conversations. I'll stay in touch with you. I want to hear how you're doing. But what a lot of people need when it comes to weight loss is really possibly a lot of times like professional help, because most people have a decent idea of how to eat to lose weight. And the whole eat less, move more. Well, duh. It's doing that can be difficult. And how am I going to do that? And some people really just need, they're not eating because they're hungry. They're eating their feelings. Or what have you. So kind of just setting that reality really early on with the client is incredibly important to say, hey, here you can expect maybe half a pound to 2 pounds a week. There's going to be some weeks where you're not going to lose weight, and I'm not going to sit here and bullshit you and say, oh, it's because you recomped and built all this muscle tissue and lost fat at the same time because you're superhuman. You probably didn't do that. It could just be water shifting. You might not have taken a shit for 2 days. You maybe we just need to adjust your calories or your exercise, and that's okay. Because even building muscle tissue and having, you know, a decent physique at this point after training for the last 12-13 years, most of my training career is spent here on the graph of progress. You get peaks and then more this, and peaks then more this, and occasionally you get this because of an injury or whatever, but more time is spent stagnant than it's not a linear, you know, diagonal line of progress, because that's not how life works. That's not how your career works. That's not how school works. How none of it works. And if people put a more realistic expectation on it, I think that gives them a much, much better chance of success, because it makes that progress easier to digest.
Yeah, it sounds remarkably similar to Dave Hill. We're friends with a hypnotist, and he tells us about, like, he's a hypnotherapist as well, so he works with a lot of people who want to give up smoking, lose weight, stop drinking. And he says that he won't do it if their wife is telling them to do it, or, you know, it has to be their decision. You know, he'll tell them to give them his cigarettes, you know, so like, and if they want them back by the end of the session, he knows that they're not going to stick to it.
You'll also check their cars for cigarettes. You have to take their lighter. So he's a collection of lighters from people he helped stop smoking, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you said, well, like you were talking about, like, people may have different reasons they're eating, and, you know, he named a few, and that there are many. People are going to just be, you know, eating their issues away.
Yeah, and it's a lot of people are like, oh, you know what it is? You know, it runs in my family. And there's always the joke, like, no, nobody runs in your family, and that's the bigger problem. But but in all seriousness, it's not – a lot of the times, like, obesity – does not run in families. Just like super skinniness does not run in families. Like height, maybe. Like our buddy Gideon that we compete with, 6'8". Chances are if he had a kid, he's not going to be 5'2". You know, but habits. You learn a lot of things. We can all say we learn things from our parents. I learned a lot of not so great things from my parents, but I learned a lot of great things too. And I kind of saw, I grew up with very humble means, you know, and what I did learn was this is somewhat of a balanced meal, you know? So it's not like we had all the money in the world to do this, but it's like, you're going to probably get some type of a canned veggie or frozen veggie with a protein source. And like one of those, I don't know if they have those over there, but they're like Knorr or Lipton rice/pasta side, some type of carbohydrate side, you know, and this is kind of a balanced meal. And I was fortunate that that's how I was brought up. You know, I didn't always eat breakfast and whatever, but I had an idea what it, you know, when we had it, we did. And So that was kind of how I was programmed from Jump Street. And also, there wasn't always just super abundance of food to go around to where we were making 12 chicken breasts for four people, you know, or two whole rotisserie chickens and this and potatoes and blah, blah, gravy and blah, blah, blah. For some families, when you see them sit down for dinner, it almost looks like a Thanksgiving meal, you know, or something every single night, which is great. That's incredible that you like to do that with your family. However, we've all seen the four-year-old kid who's already 50 pounds overweight. And that has nothing to do with his genetics and more to do with what mom and dad are probably feeding him and his lack of activity, yeah. At least according to what science would say. And that's unfortunate. I'm not blaming the child because the child has virtually no say in that. But it's probably grow up to, and it'll have positive associations with food because that might have been the bonding time that he had with his family. Maybe dad works all day and so does mom, but he's going to have a really positive association with sitting down for dinner and talking about our day and whatever. So food, at least for the near future and probably possibly forever, will have a much stronger positive, you know, relation in his mind than it has for you and I. Because subconsciously it's like, oh, this is happy. Sitting down for dinner makes me really happy because I think about mom and dad or I think about whatever, or some type of trauma may have been, food may have been your escape or whatever. So it's really tough to address those things. I love to still keep in touch with a few of those people I've had to do that with. And some of them have been incredibly successful, but it's a really, really tough thing to address because typically people's overweight, underweight or what have you is much deeper than like, oh, I didn't know eating Twinkies was bad, you know, or eating 100 Twinkies was bad. Like, yeah, we're not in contest. It is bad.
Yeah, I can say, you know, you don't think it's bad at the time, but Twinkies are, they're amazing. They're beautiful. We with the smuggle them into Ireland. When I came back from the States, we brought so many back in our suitcase. Yeah, extra 50 pounds arrived overnight.
That's awesome. Mickey really likes Twinkies. I'm not huge on Twinkies, but she likes those golden cakes. I'm more in like ring dings and ding dongs, like the chocolate coated ones.
That's fair. That's fair. That's your opinion, man. You got a little bit of being wrong.
I don't think I've ever. I was only in America once. I was in Florida. I don't think I've ever actually had a Twinkie.
Well, you need to come back and get yourself some.
You know.
Yeah, we'll go back at some point
in the schedule.
Absolutely, we got so many of our former guests to meet. You know, It has to be done. What was I going to say?
What were you going to say?
That is the question. I'm really to remember now.
You know. You take your time there.
Thomas, I appreciate that you would, you know, say that to me so I'd have the opportunity to think about this.
Me and Nick can go back talking about football if you want, but I don't think that would be.
Would you really? Would you do that for me?
You know, dude, I would happily.
You would be happy in doing that for me.
You know, I'm trying to help you by stall so you could think of your question. Has it worked?
No, I can't think of it. Oh, God. So it was something to do with, you know, the obesity and. When they're kids. Oh yeah, it was. Thanks, Thomas.
No problem.
You know, like the bullying people can get. You know, when they're overweight and young, it's awful.
Yeah.
And you know, I wonder where that would come from. Like, I guess from their parents or whatever media they consume at a young age. But yeah, man. When I was in school, there was this lad, and he was, you know, he was twice the size of the rest of us.
Right.
And you know, like, I was like maybe 11, 10. And this poor guy got bullied to shreds. And I'm pretty sure he continued on until he left school, like completely, college and everything. And, dude, it's awful. It's awful. And I guess, like, that is coming from the place where you're saying, like, oh, it might have been a childhood thing. And, you know, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, because it's. The kid doesn't.
And that kid's going to grow up like not liking people as much as a result.
Probably. And like, that's not to say it's. I'm not saying somebody's body composition is super important as far as their value as a person or whatever. Obviously, that's just stupidity. But that kid's not. Probably not going to lead a completely healthy life. Mm-hmm. If the kid's 10 years old, there used to be the specials like on Maury and Jerry Springer or those. And it's like. my kid's 9 years old and 195 pounds. You know, it's like, dude, and the kid's like, you know, maybe 4 feet or something. And it's, you're setting that kid up and possibly doing irreparable damage to the kid's health, because it's been proven time and time again, the whole health at any size movement is ludicrous.
To what extent?
Yeah, to an extent, obviously.
I said, what, to what extent?
Oh, for example, there's a famous model, plus size model, which is, that's cool, it's fine, who was on the cover of a really famous magazine, maybe it was Cosmopolitan, like British Cosmopolitan or something.
Mm.
And she's like 5 feet tall, and I want to say she was about 3 bills and about 5 feet tall. So she's not like slightly overweight. She's what would be referred to as morbidly obese, or I don't know what the PC term is now.
That's the scientific medical term.
Yeah, but it's like, it's offensive. So like, whatever's not offensive.
As we said earlier, science doesn't care.
Yes, yeah, it'll go Ben Shapiro, facts don't care about your feelings type of deal. But no, it's not, a healthy weight for her, healthy, at least as far as blood markers, would probably be somewhere between, she's like 5 feet, depending on her frame, let's just say 110 and 140, give or take. Obviously, I'm not as good, accurate with female weights. And there's obviously some flex to that. Lighter than that probably wouldn't be okay. Probably maybe 115 to 140 change. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's kind of hard to gauge it because of muscle tissue carried or frame size or whatever. Being 300, I could almost guarantee, if she doesn't have health problems now, which if a blood panel would almost unequivocally come back, her cholesterol is high, her blood pressure is high, her resting, like her blood sugar, she's probably pre-diabetic. I don't know those things, but I would put some money on it. Her liver enzymes are probably elevated. And if they're not, because she's like 26 or something, they will be. Because when was the last time, and I'm not being, I'm sure she's a lovely human being. Again, there's nothing against her. You saw an 80-year-old morbidly obese person? And the answer is you haven't. You know why? Because they're dead.
You know, I have a point.
They're dead. And that sounds terrible and awful, but like, you typically don't see 80-year-old 7'3" people. You don't see 80-year-old morbidly obese people. You typically don't see 80-year-old dwarves or little people or whatever. Again, whatever the preferred.
I think it's little people is the.
Little people, yeah. You typically, because again, just like any species, whether that's humans or elephants or cockroaches or what have you, there's some type of optimal size and shape and what have you. It's also a good reason why women outlive men, typically slightly smaller body masses. Or I want to say, maybe was it Japan or China that had the longest lifespan? We're looking it up.
Yeah, it was islands in Japan.
Yeah, but the body masses are typically much smaller. They're typically much, much healthier weights. Like Miki talks about all the time, when she was growing up in, when she moved to Japan, her breakfast there, I want to say, was like grilled fish and miso soup.
Right.
And rice. Yeah, just like veggies. You know, like that's what it was. Like, so her idea, then when she came to America, she was exposed to like cookies and cream milkshakes and Pop-Tarts for breakfast. She's like, "What? This isn't breakfast. Like, what is this?" You know? And so there's, again, it's not to say you can't have a Pop-Tart or an Oreo milkshake occasionally, but those things will pay. Like, smaller body masses are BMI. That's probably one of the only things where BMI is remotely relevant, is longevity.
Yeah.
And that's, they pay off. That falling somewhere within or close to said healthy range of a BMI.
So you really don't like the idea of healthy at any size?
I don't, again.
It's not something you don't like, it's just on a scientific note, it's not good for you.
Science doesn't like it. I like the idea of gravity, and I like the idea of the laws of thermodynamics, and I like the idea of, I wish it was wrong, but if it was wrong, cardiovascular disease probably wouldn't be such a preeminent killer in the United States.
Yes, you know, you guys have a pretty high obesity rate, isn't it? 70%.
Yeah, I believe it. I want to say, we looked up like what's the biggest city in the world, in the United States, and I want to say it's Houston, Texas, where it's like 68% obese. Or something. So it's like 2 out of every 3 people is clinically obese. That's not me saying, hey, that person's fat. No, that's science and doctors saying, hey, you need to drop some poundage. or something bad will probably happen. I believe Mississippi is the fattest state, and I believe Houston is the heaviest city. But
so, let me just fact check myself there.
Yeah,
it was 40% on 40% of people in the United States are obese. Yeah. I said 70 a second ago. I have a friend who told me 70 the other day, and that's why I was there.
But still, 2 out of 5 people are obese. Now, that's not to say obese is kind of, because I fall close weight-wise to the BMI obese marker. But obviously, my composition is slightly different. That being said, I'll probably drop some muscle tissue as I get older if my interest is living to be 80. Like, you don't see jacked people at 90. You see lean people at 80.
Excuse me. Have you seen Sylvester Stallone?
Let's just say,
yes, he's lean. He's pretty... very lean. He's shredded, but he doesn't.
And he's a broken neck.
Compared to, what was it, Rocky? Not the most recent Rocky, but the one where he still fought. He was like probably 25 to 30 pounds heavier when he was like 60-year-old Stallone compared to like 73-year-old Stallone. He's still in insane shape and shredded to bits, but his weight is much lower than it was like 15 years ago when they filmed that last Rocky where he actually fought. And he was like, he did that in Rambo, and I remember seeing his forearm basically just looked like the size of like a monster truck tire. But even then, like, he knows, and plus two, he's, Stallone, I don't think, is interested in living to be 95. I think he knows, I'm going to be a kick-ass actor, and I'm still a better action hero than Joe, who gives a shit, that's 25 in Hollywood now.
Mm.
It's much more believable seeing him kick-ass than, like, Zac Efron kick-ass.
Yeah.
No? But, Nick, just to finish up, I want to talk a bit about longevity because we brought it up a couple of times.
Sure.
Okay, I know very little on the subject. Is it about trying to make yourself live longer?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess what steps would you advise people take?
I would say the thing I've read.
No, it's from sports, stay away from firearms.
Yeah, exactly.
Essential
exactly.
Oils.
Don't play in the road. No, I would say the thing from things I've read and discussed with people much, much smarter than myself, there's no such thing as the fountain of youth, obviously, but the closest thing that research and medicine and doctors have found, and everybody knows, like, doctors and scientists disagree on a lot. They disagree on a lot. They all almost unequivocally agree exercise is the closest thing they found to the fountain of youth, or activity. It doesn't have to be the gym. It could be Pilates. It could be sex. It could be lifting in a gym. It could be whatever. Just stay active. It's going to be in your best interest to stay active in whichever form you choose to do. I choose to do lifting weights and one of those other ones. But however you want to stay active, stay active. And so it's going to be that. Make sure your fluid intake is adequate. That will kind of just help, like, liver, kidneys, whatever. They'll let them do their jobs. Don't do cleanses. They're stupid. That's what your liver and kidneys are for. Make sure your fiber intake is adequate. So preferably from like things like produce, fresh produce, or frozen produce, whatever, and maybe like some oats and things like that. And aim to have a moderate protein intake. So you have a healthy body composition or weight. You don't have to be jacked. Being jacked is probably not in your best interest for longevity. I would probably say a longevity-based diet is probably, if I had to put a percentage on it, just to make it simple, maybe 80% produce and like 20% things you could kill, you know? So, and then, or maybe like 75% produce, 24% things you can kill, 1% shit you really enjoy so you don't kill your neighbor. You know, it's, that would probably be really in your best interest because you'll be able to sustain it. Every once in a while you want a Krispy Kreme donut or a Twinkie, fucking eat it. But like, make sure that that's just a small percentage of what you do, because think about it as a financial budget. You can't take trips to Disney every week. If you save for it, that's fine. It's like, and you're investing in your health. It's not expensive to eat healthy. That's bullshit. Okay. Like, even people who are like 400 pounds, like, you know what? It's expensive to lose weight and eat healthy. Really? If you just ate half the shit you eat right now, it would literally cost half the money and you would weigh half as much as you do. So I don't think it's more expensive. That's mathematically impossible. But anyway, So a lot of produce, get some lean proteins. If there's a section of your diet where you don't like or you don't want it in there, whether that's maybe that's produce, you got to do like a greens powder for a green supplement. Maybe that's fiber, so you got to do a fiber supplement. Maybe that's meat, so you have to do a protein supplement. That's fine too. And then just be active and probably try to be happy. That's probably one of the biggest things, because if you give a shit about your life and you wake up in the morning, you find happiness. I don't care if that's a quote book. I don't care if that's transcendental meditation or a morning quickie or whatever it's got to be to set you off on the right foot. Do it, man. If you're happy, all those other things are going to be allowing you to fall into place. And you're going to want to live a long time.
Well, there you go. There you go. Don't know what else to say to that.
Oh, fuck. You got me there. Fuck. Nice one, Puddin.
Yeah, with longevity, we tried to get... And it failed because I don't think they want to give up their magic. We tried to get an anti-aging doctor on. Now, not someone who sells creams. Someone who, like, tries to see, okay, what chemical is, you know, helping rats live, like, 40% longer? And why am I not using this? You know? Mm. Oh, dude, I will spend money to try to get someone on like that. Like, that is... But that's one of those important conversations you'd want to have.
Those are some really cool research things that they do, and just finding some things like common denominators amongst places with high longevity rates. Right now, we know it's like low body mass, like healthy body composition and activity are probably the most common denominators we know. And typically those, like, you know, Asian countries with the high longevity rates have high instances of produce and lean proteins typically in their diet too. And people are like, well, they don't eat processed foods. All right, let it go.
Sure. Processed food isn't the best for you.
It's not, because of its hyper palatability, probably, because it tastes so good, it's so calorically dense.
Yeah.
But there's really never been a study done on almost any food group that shows a direct negative health correlation, Crisco included, or enriched bleached wheat flour, or any of this stuff, right? Pop tarts, blah, blah, blah. There's only been one ever proven. Basically, it's a poison in any dose, and that's alcohol. Alcohol, the second you put it, is not really meant to be ingested by the human body. And I get it. If you want to have a drink every once in a while, that's fine. Just know that ingesting pure Crisco in small amounts would be better for you, at least according to science, most likely, than ingesting alcohol.
Interesting.
Because one of the doctors reporting on longevity had something that was against that. Like, there's a tipping point in alcohol where it's good for you in a certain amount.
Oh, fucking Christ.
And then when you get past a certain point,
Resveratrol and red wine and all this bullshit, you'd get alcohol poisoning before you got any health benefit from the antioxidants and alcohol. That's as dumb as people saying you're going to lose weight from the cocoa if you eat fucking dark chocolate. It's asinine bullshit. Now, again, it's okay probably to have a drink every once in a while. Saying alcohol is good for you to a certain extent, they probably wouldn't completely try to ban pregnant women from having it if it was good for you to a certain extent. Or, like, again, they...
That's a good point, Nick. You really pulled it out of the hat there. That's a really good point.
It's like they wouldn't be like, you know, you wouldn't ask your doctor if you're a pregnant woman. And I know some people would... Well, my doctor said, like, half a glass of wine a day is okay. It's like, lady, if you're pregnant and you can't give up half a glass of wine a day, we got bigger problems than our hands. So, like,
Nick.
Again, I'm not saying everyone's got to cut booze out of their diets and whatever. What I am saying is that's, as far as I know, and again, speaking to people much more intelligent than me and much higher educations, that's the only one that it shows a linear negative health consequence. That being said, some of those people still choose to drink. You know, I have a buddy with a doctorate in biochemistry and a master's in nutritional science, and he still has beer now and then. You know, he probably has a few beers a week, you know, or drinks a couple of beers a week during games and shit. You know, but that's to say, but he understands that you can't live your life in a bubble either. I know eating 48 in hot dogs for 10 minutes or, you know, 17 pounds of poutine isn't good for me. I still choose to do it.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm not going to stand here and be like, well, a little bit of poutine's not bad for you, good for you. No, it's what I choose to be, I guess, my vice, so to speak.
Now, you really caught me off guard with the pregnant woman thing. That's such a good point. I'm going to like investigate that more now, because it piqued my interest.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like, again, it's how negative it is probably very, very minimal for a period of time. There's probably more mental negatives to that, behavioral negatives than physical. But it's the only carbohydrate with a caloric load of a fat.
Mm.
You know, all carbohydrates are 4 calories per gram. That one's closer to 9. Mm. So it's will something happen with very minimal intake? Probably not. But at least according to science, it's like best idea. Also, probably not.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Would don't anyone be getting the impression that I'm a raging alcoholic myself and Thomas barely drink. No, just justifying excessive alcohol consumption isn't really a thing. I'm going to take out the isn't really, it just isn't a thing. But, you know, we all like to have a little drink every now and then.
Sure, yeah, and that's cool, man. It's like, I wouldn't want
somebody to open up a bitch on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's that's cool. Like, again, it's, I mean, just like anything, no different than the Pop-Tarts and the Twinkies and the whatever, me doing the eating contest, or somebody who buys some cigarettes here and there, or whatever. Is it probably okay in moderation? Probably. But I think it was just the American Dietary Association also just came out and switched their recommendations on that to like from moderate intake is okay to limit intake. Mm. That just changed actually the other day. Because I think as more research comes out, they're going to have much, much tougher time showing like, this is on 500,000 death certificates a year. We're having a tougher time, you know, rationalizing this.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess that I touched on all my things. Thomas, do you have any final questions?
No, I'm pretty good. You have a Major League Eating competition coming up. Why don't you just tell us real quick about that?
We have the DraftKings Big Game Snackdown on February 7th at 4:30.
I love that name.
Eastern time. It's going to be 8 foods in like they call it steeplechase format, which I had never heard before the Halloween thing, but in consecutive order. So I believe it's I'm going to forget now. Chili, pizza, cheese balls, 8-layer dip, a grinder. Jalapeno poppers, boneless wings, and something I'm forgetting. But we have to, whoever finishes them first wins. So it's myself, Joey Chestnut, Jeff Esper, Gideon Oji, Darren Breen, and Michelle Lesko. My beautiful significant other will be sitting out, of course, because of us, you know, expecting our little one. But she will be cheering me on from the side. But that is Sunday, February 7th. I am psyched to participate in that one.
That's awesome.
Well, good for you, man. Thanks. Can't wait for you to win. Dominate. Thank you. That would take it over.
Be cool. That would be cool.
Awesome.
Well, I mean, power to you, man. And look, how could we ever continue the show and not have you on again? So we'll have you on again sometime soon. Yes. There was a long time that you were like the person who's on the most. And then comedian Paul Roseberry took you out by a sliver.
Bastard.
So we'll have to get you back.
You hear that, Paul? Talking to you, sir.
Talking to you, Paul Roseberry. So anyway, so if you got this part of the video, actually, before I say that, Nick, if people want to check out, where can they find you?
Check out thehungrycouple.com and pretty much everything will go through there, or youtube.com/MikiSudo, MikiSudo. Either of those things, you can see our eating craziness and keep up with updates on the first baby of competitive eating.
Awesome. So yeah, if you got this far in the video or the audio version, I don't know, make sure to like, comment, subscribe, tell your grandma about the podcast, and take it handy.
Good luck to you.
Top of the morning, lads and ladies. Support for the Awfully Irish podcast is now brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below the waist grooming.
Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and you're no longer lead the look of the Irish with the ladies. Manscaped just launched in Ireland. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job. You can now be one of the first men in Ireland to experience their life-changing products.
Your balls will thank you.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code IrishPod at manscaped.com.
That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code IrishPod. Top of the morning, lads and ladies. Support for the Off the Irish podcast is now brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming.
Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, and you're no longer lead the look of the Irish with the ladies. Manscaped just launched in Ireland. We've gone years without using the right tools for the job. You can now be one of the first men in Ireland to experience their life-changing products.
Your balls will thank you.
Get 20% off and free shipping with the code IrishPod at manscaped.com.
That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code IrishPod.